fields of bodies burning as the war machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.
Hi, this is Bob Petrakis bringing you the other side of the news.
And I'm Dan Dugan, the other guy on the other side. WGRN, the Green Renaissance.
This is Bob Petrakis bringing you the other side of the news on WGRN 94.1 FM. And I'm speaking with Mary Jane Borden, who I've worked with for more than two decades on legalizing hemp and cannabis in general. Now, Mary Jane, you spend a lot of time monitoring what's going on nationally in the state of Ohio. What is the status of hemp today?
Hemp is in... limbo in terms of there's nothing uniform across the United States that says hemp is legal. The legality of hemp is going to depend upon what state you're in. Now, the 2014 Farm Bill had a provision where it would permit universities or research projects to grow hemp in the states where the legislature, you know, passed a bill that allowed that. So the first in line to do that was Kentucky, and they've been the first in line for hemp for a very, very long time. And as a result, they've started to get this going. The other states, I believe Tennessee, Colorado, and states like that, there's actually quite a number that have passed some form of hemp legislation. And therefore, there is hemp product, United States-grown hemp product out there. However, the United States remains one of the largest importer of hemp in the United States. And so you can imagine this is money that's going out rather than utilizing farmers, and particularly the Ohio farmers, who could grow hemp here in the United States and, you know, build up the family farm again and, you know, make all kinds of goods. And there's, you know, we could go on and on about the benefits of hemp. But that's kind of where we're at with it in the short brushstroke.
What's the status specifically in Ohio?
Ohio, unfortunately, wasn't one of those states to pass the hemp legislation necessary to establish the research programs. So therefore, this state, you know, which is, you know, the quintessential market, you know, manufacturing state, the quintessential transportation state, we have a fabulous, you know, freeway system. We're one of the largest farm states in the nation. Can't grow hemp, and it's a real crime, because farmers, you know, could make some additional cash if not replace some crops or rotate some crops that, you know, hemp can provide many kinds of benefits, including soil improvement. So Ohio, unfortunately, did not do that. I think there's some movement down to the legislature to pass a bill, but if I'm not mistaken, this is the end of the legislative calendar, the two-year legislative calendar. We're electing representatives again, you know, in the fall. So the legislative, you know, new legislative year begins at the beginning of 2019, I believe, runs to probably 2020. And so therefore, you know, whatever bill is going to be introduced will probably have to be introduced after the first of the year, unless, you know, they expedite it like HB 523, Ohio's medical marijuana law that passed in, you know, like 6 short weeks. To make, you know, marijuana legal in the state of Ohio, medical marijuana.
All right, and it's my understanding, you've studied this, there are reports that hemp's fairly easy to grow. Many claim it grows like a weed.
There was, remember, old ditch weed, you know. There was places, I remember reading in Kentucky, where, you know, hemp just became feral. They grew a lot of it, you know, prior, you know, like in the World War II, during World War II. And so hemp just became feral, and you could grow in ditches, you know. Therefore, the term, remember, this was kind of colloquial term, ditch weed. And so, yeah, hemp is very easy to grow. It loves to grow, you know, many places where you can't grow anything else. And as I'm, you know, I don't want to qualify myself as the not necessarily the quintessential expert on hemp, but, you know, some of the things I've learned going through this, and I'll have to add the Ohio Rights Group, you know, which you and I co-founded, you know, many years ago, has a really great section on its website about hemp. And it goes into a great deal of detail. You go into that section, and you will probably come out really understanding this issue and really understanding what the benefits of hemp. So I recommend everybody go there. And so I kind of learn what I know by being involved with that part of the org's website.
Now, can you be arrested for having hemp? Growing hemp?
Well,
as opposed to if you imported it?
If you were in a state that did not have a law, yeah, you probably, let's say you're in Kentucky, and you're in theory growing hemp outside of that research program at a university or, you know, some kind of facility like that, yeah, it remains illegal, okay? At least in the eyes of the federal government. You know, the states may have, you know, Kentucky may have passed legislation that makes that look quite different, so... I still say under the auspices of the federal government, though, it's only as a part of the Farm Bill's research program.
Okay, so hemp, still illegal unless you import it. And that surely would help the balance of trade in a lot of these farm states, would give us another crop to grow for domestic consumption as well as for export.
Absolutely.
And, of course, we bring in a lot of that Chinese hemp as well as Canadian hemp, do we not?
Yeah, I believe it. And I think some of the European countries are now, you know, have hemp production. So it's you know, China's a big importer in the United States, and I'm sure that, you know, we're sending a whole lot of money back to them. And it's unfortunate for our farmers. It really is. And the things that we can do with it, you're making, for example, seat covers and cars out of hemp. You can make houses, you know, the foundations, cement, hempcrete, I think they call it, you know, out of hemp. You can make purses and scarves and foodstuffs. You know, it's one of the healthiest foodstuffs there is, you know, with omega acids and things like that. And so I could go on. You know, it's what they say, there's something like 22,000 uses of hemp.
Yeah, from the old popular science you know, magazine back in the 30s, the Wonder Product. Virtually anything made out of plastic could be made out of biodegradable hemp.
Right, of course.
All right, and again, in World War II, the famed documentary put out by the government, Hemp for Victory. It's where we made all our rope back then. It was always hemp rope, even when I was in elementary school and junior high. We used to climb the hemp rope.
Really? Well, I was a girl. We didn't do much hemp. We have rope climbing, but that's really cool.
Yeah, so replaced by nylon, which is not a biodegradable product. But again, that looks like the problem with the government being involved. What about the product that some people can get high off? You can't get high off hemp. THC, you know, content is way too low, almost non-existent. But what's it look like right now for marijuana in the United States as well as Ohio?
I think there's more traction with hemp federally. There's a Farm Bill 2018. The Farm Bill 2014 produced the research sites I was talking about. But the Farm Bill 2018 is really a broad-based bill. And I know this is probably a progressive audience. And, you know, the words I'm going to say may kind of bristle them. But Mitch McConnell, you know, the Senate Majority Leader, is a person who is championing this. Now, of course, he is from Kentucky. He's seen what the research can do. This is what happens when you enlighten people. He's seen what's going to come of the research sites, and he knows that Kentucky can certainly use, it's a poor state in many ways, could use a new vibrant crop to replace tobacco. And so he is the champion. He is the lead sponsor of the this amendment that, or this bill for hemp, specifically for hemp to legalize hemp, and then also that provision in the 2018 Farm Bill. And so what that means is that it would, if this bit passed, all of a sudden, and of course President Trump has to sign it, all of a sudden across the United States the term legal in all 50 states will be true and will apply. And this also covers extracts of hemp. Extracts of hemp means that, for example, you can run through one of those extracting machines and extract CBD.
Which
is cannabidiol. You know, in the cannabis plant, there's probably 60 some cannabinoids. Now, you know, the most one we know most about, you know, probably most people have heard of, is called THC, which is tetrahydrocannabinol. But THC is the one, you know, just you heard about. But it doesn't mean it's the only guy in town in the cannabis plant. And there's, you know, some, almost 60 others. And one of those others is cannabidiol. Cannabidiol is extracted, you know, it's in probably in the marijuana, so to speak, but it doesn't get you high. It doesn't, you know, make you feel any different than you are all the time, except you might feel better because cannabidiol is found, they're finding, well, can, you know, alleviate seizures, that can ease depression, it can do a host of other things that are very therapeutic. And in fact, GW Pharmaceuticals just got FDA approval for a cannabidiol extract, a CBD extract called Epidiolex. And so that means that it's going to probably go on the market very soon, probably in October, once the DEA reschedules it, and it's unclear where that's going to actually go into the, you know, the regulatory oversight of the Controlled Substances Act. But nonetheless, going back to the Farm Bill, I mean, here's CBD here. You know, here I'm talking about the multiple uses of hemp. CBD over here. Well, actually, the CBD in Epidiolex comes from the marijuana plant, meaning there is THC probably in that plant someplace, or the plant's been bred to be high in the CBD molecules. But over on the back on the hemp side of the fence, CBD could be extracted. In terms of the language of the current Farm Bill that's it's in conference between the House and Senate versions. You might talk about the United States House versus United States Senate. And so it's in conference. If that comes out intact, then as I say, CBD will be legal in all 50 states. Now, I hope that's, you know, we know what happens when bills go through legislatures and conferences. So, you know, we'll just be hopeful that it comes out intact.
Now, in a recent article you wrote for the Columbus Free Press, you say that CBD, the extract you've been talking about with all these therapeutic and medical uses, has become a political football.
Oh yeah, oh definitely. In Ohio, there's a roaring debate right now. Is it legal, or who controls it? And so, of course, they talk about the FDA approval of Epidiolex, which means that once it goes on the market, it's, you know, it's legal so long as the doctor has prescribed it, principally to two very dire syndromes that affect epileptic children. So, typically, doctors are required to stay within the approval conditions for the application that got them the FDA, the NDA, what they call a new drug application. And so generally they stay within those guidelines. So there's a very narrow use of CBD. Now you'll probably see CBD in different stores, or you know, I don't want to necessarily name names of where they're at. They probably don't want to know that, that to be on the air. But you can buy kind of like, let's call it over-the-counter, if you will. Let's use the word over-the-counter, CBD, in these various stores. And that's kind of what's up in there. Are those legal or not? Now, the Board of Pharmacy in Ohio put out a notice about a week ago that said that no CBD other than that that's produced within the scope of the medical marijuana program would be legal in Ohio. Now, that's an interesting statement because the medical marijuana program missed its September 8th deadline. They were supposed to be fully functional, was kind of the words that were told us in 2016 when the bill passed. And it's crippled. The program's just, it's hobbling at the moment. And so a lot of people are angry about that. And then to couple that with the proclamation that you can only get CBD legally through something that essentially doesn't exist at the moment, you know, it's very aggravating, very, very deflating after, you know, working all this time to get marijuana to medical marijuana to patients.
You're listening to WGRN 94.1, The Green Renaissance. This is Dr. Bob Trakis talking with Mary Jane Borden, a writer as well as an expert on many things related to cannabis. You relate the tale of a woman driving through Wyoming with CBD oil that she purchased legally, and she was arrested.
Well, that's what you get into with the difference between the states. You know, each state, you know, has its own laws, and that's good because states were kind of set up that way to be the laboratories of democracy. But in New Mexico, really has a fairly, and it was one of the early states to set up a medical marijuana program. It has a fairly robust program going right now, so she could walk in a dispensary and she could get various kinds of, you know, medicine, cannabis, or this and that, or the titrated in various percentages. And one thing she purchased apparently was an oil that was CBD oil. And Jen, this is, if it's CBD oil that's used medicinally, it would be extracted from a marijuana plant, which is slightly different than I like to liken the difference between marijuana, different plants and different strains. As I know this may sound facetious, but it's true. It's like dogs. You know, you have the Great Dane and then you have the Chihuahua, and they both are, they're dogs, and they're, you know, both fully canines, but you know, they're, you know, but they say both fully canines, but they're still quite different in size, quite different in temperament. And so same with cannabis, you know, the hemp plant may grow to be very tall and stocky, and that's what you really want it for, the fibers in it and the textiles you can make from it. But then again, with the marijuana plant, it might be shorter and have much more flowering buds that are, you know, bred to produce the THC and the CBD, et cetera.
You say that this pertains to a June 2016 DEA Controlled Substance Act.
Yeah, I think that was when they put an entry in the Federal Register that they were going to create a special class for CBD because cannabidiol, because it was all lumped under a big umbrella of the definition, the big umbrella of marijuana. And so they wanted to segment that out. And the Hemp Industries Association objected to that, but essentially lost. So the DEA went ahead and created that classification. And in the process, you know, it solidified it under Schedule 1, the most restrictive schedule of the, as they say, the Controlled Substances Act, which is the legislation that governs drugs, you know, particularly ones that are legal in the United States.
All right. So, with all this, there's other implications as well. And the Free Press has gotten reports. I know that there's groups out there that have had their bank accounts shut down by being associated with anything cannabis. whether it be hemp or the stronger strains that are legal in some states and approved in many for medical use.
Right. It's pretty shocking, I think. I ran across a statistic the other day that I want to read to your audience here. This just blew my mind, okay? Nearly 70% of all cannabis business in the U.S. have direct contact with marijuana plants. Do not have a bank account. Repeat that. Do not have a bank account. Mm. Even 50% of cannabis businesses that deal directly with federally illegal cannabis are also unbanked. Now, conceptualize this. Let's just use the Ohio example. Cannabis in Ohio is expected to be a $200 million industry. But obviously, once they get it off the ground, you know, $200 million is there awaiting. And under the current system, all that business has to be done in cash. Now, think about this. You know, patients are allowed under HB 523, under the Ohio Medical Marijuana Control Program, nothing's been established yet. There are no dispensaries. There are no processors. There's actually a couple cultivators, both small and large. They're actually at the point of maybe getting plants in the ground. I think one or two have, or in the soil. I don't know if they use actual ground. And so this is a program that is barely operational. Okay, as I said, when it is, we're looking at $200 million. Let's say so we get to the point where something's operational in Ohio. And therefore, under HB 523, as I was saying, you're allowed to have a 90-day supply. Now, the 90-day supply will be determined by how you and your doctor in terms of, you know, what works best for you. Does flour work better for you than oils, et cetera? But a 90-day supply, let's say under current Ohio law, just not even be specific about which form, is a fairly large amount of marijuana, okay? Now, you would probably pay, let's just throw some in the air number out there, let's say $500 for that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're expecting patients to have large sums of cash, like $500 on their person or in their house, go to a dispensary, walk in with that money, and walk out with a controlled substance. Now, what's wrong with that picture? Do you think the criminal element might notice that?
Well, that's the famous quote when they ask the one bank robber, why do you rob banks? And he says, well, that's where they keep the money. Obviously makes the dispensaries a possible target because you're forcing them to deal in cash and essentially locking them out of the banking system.
And conceptualize this. You know, you go to CVS. You know, somebody's got a prescription to OxyContin, and it's legal. Some patients really need this. You know, I realize there is a serious opioid crisis out there, but some people need heavy-duty painkillers, and it's perfectly legal for them to get a prescription from their doctor and pick the prescription up at a pharmacy.
Mm-hmm.
So they're picking it up at the pharmacy. And they get a little bag, it says CVS on it, and, you know, what else is there in the pharmacy? There's probably 10,000 other things sitting on the shelves of that pharmacy. Or you could probably buy 3,000 other drugs, you know, for all I know. $100 drugs, at least, you know, for the sake of argument. So they got a little bag there that says CVS. You walk out. Okay, there you go. Now you go in as the patient. You got your $500 there of marijuana that you just purchased. That the criminal element was going to know, what did you walk out with there? You know, there's no doubt what you walked out with. And so, again, it's an easy mark. This is easy pickings, and it's inconceivable almost that people in the 2018 would be forced into the situation of the cash only basis where you're practically back to the 1900s, early 1900s, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think it's a real Achilles heel to the rollout of the medical marijuana program. I don't know if the state is in, is I'm sure they're aware of this. I don't know if they're intentionally being silent about it, or, you know, if it's where it is. And it, I think it's just this great big unknown. Now, they were in originally with HB 523, where they were considering this like closed loop payment system, where somehow the information that is required to pay will be kind of kept in the patient database. But I think that would probably get into HIPAA violations in terms of merging credit card data or, you know, or money data with you know, patient condition data. So I don't know if that's the reason it fell apart, but it's been silent for 2 years.
And there are reports that organizations that have advocated for hemp or cannabis in general have had their bank accounts shut down, even if they're educational only.
Well, I think that Normal and MPP had that problem. And recently that there's a actually, this is how you win an election, folks.
Mm-hmm.
You have your bank account forced closed. I mean, this is the key. This, her name is Nikki Fried, I believe, and she was running for an agriculture commission in Florida. Now, they must elect those positions.
Yeah, you some know, states do. Texas is very famous for having and very important role, an elected agricultural commissioner.
Well, I mean, think of it this way. This is a big deal because she's running, I think she's running as a Democrat, I think. You can correct me on that, but I think it's that she's running as a Democrat. And it's a pretty big deal because her nom de plume, her, you know, fame comes from being a medical marijuana lobbyist. And that's pretty significant right there. But what's even more significant, two things are even more significant. First of all, she had her bank account forced closed because she received donations from, apparently received donations from cannabis-oriented businesses, you know, a cultivator or a dispensary or something like this. So she, this is probably about the beginning of August, I think it was. I think it was Wells Fargo that did it. And so Wells Fargo closed her account. And it made national news. And so,
and we know Wells Fargo hates to close accounts. They'll open dozens for you without your permission.
So, unless you use the word cannabis.
Cannabis.
then you're gone. You can put Oxycontin on there, but not cannabis, you know. So she's going through, you know, there was an election, I think, in Florida in August. And sure enough, she wins. She wins the election. And then the next bank that she goes to closed her account again. This is not her personal account or anything like that. This is her campaign account. This is the money. You think there'd be some kind of campaign finance thing there, you know?
Right, or at least First Amendment protection. Well, we're down to the final minute. Any last thoughts? The Industrial Hemp Farm Summit has been called off on September 29th, correct?
Yes, it has. And I think they were so successful that they had to get another venue. And so they'll have more information coming in a couple of weeks. But just so you listeners or not, listeners know, yes, the Farm Summit has been canceled for September 29th.
All right. And any sites you want to throw out the name of before we end?
I want to refer you again to the Ohio Rights Group, who has we have a great amount of information on our site, and I also want to refer your listeners to our new ambassadors program. Bob, you're a member of it, and I am, but we're going to get out and talk like we're talking right now in the community. We want to talk to your church, we want to talk to your Rotary Club, we want to talk in your school, any place we can about the cannabis, because we know a whole lot about it, and we want to make sure you have the facts. Called the Org Ambassadors Program at OhioRightsGroup.info or OhioRightsGroup.org.
All right, we're out of time. Thanks a lot, Mary Jane Borden.
You're welcome. Thank you, Bob.
Thanks for listening to The Other Side of the News. This is Bob Fitrakis.
And Dan Dugan, WGRN 94.1 LPFM, The Green Renaissance.